Hello, how are you?
Oh, that's so much better. Good, good, good. Well, let's go back to my original question. How was your holiday?
My Christmas was great. We had 18 people over the house, lots of little kids because my nephews and nieces all have kids, and we all have dogs, so there were lots of dogs, and very wonderfully chaotic, if that makes any sense.
That is perfect. That's how holidays ought to be. Well, that's wonderful. It's been an interesting offseason for the Red Sox so far. A couple of nice pickups, getting Garrett Crochet, Walker Buehler, if he can continue the progress that he showed coming back from a Tommy John in the postseason. Well, what do you think so far of what they've been done? Does this seem to be a team that's more serious about contending?
I think they're a little bit more serious. I think that they are still keeping an eye on the books, and they are no longer big players for the big ticket item, which bothers me a little bit. I was one of those eternal optimists that would have loved to have seen Juan Soto play at Fenway, but what are you going to do? A better question, how are you and what's going on?
Well, I'm good. We the station is going off the air. Well, we have three stations here, a big FM powerhouse that's the number one station in the market, and then another smaller FM that's a sort of alternative, adult alternative music, and then our AM station here. We have buyers for the big FM, but the other two stations are going away here on the 31st. So we're looking for a new home. I'm exploring some options. We are going to go to the podcast world because if it's good enough for Bob Ryan, it's good enough for me.
And Bob LaBelle and Mike Lynch and a whole bunch of cool people. And I just want you to know how much I have always enjoyed being on your program because it gives me a chance to reconnect. As you know, I spent a good number of years up in Maine early in my career, mostly in southern Maine, but I did a lot of UMaine stuff and Bangor High stuff. And every time I've ever been on your show, in the back of my mind, I say to myself, somebody's listening that I wrote about or watched play in a game somewhere, and that always made me feel very happy.
Well, and we always hear from people who are so excited to hear you on because they remember your work covering sports events here in Maine. And I want to ask you about that because I saw a picture not too long ago. You get together on a regular basis with some of that the old staff of the Portland Press Herald back in the day. Can you go back and remind us who some of the great people were that you worked with when you were in Portland?
Well, it was Jerry Krasnick who went on to work for ESPN.com. He covered the Cincinnati Reds out in Cincinnati, covered the Colorado Rockies. He works for the MLB Players Association now. He's just about the best sports writer I ever worked with, and he was from Munjoy Hill in Portland. So we get together with him. Alan Lessels, who went on to work at the Boston Globe. He's in New Hampshire now. Augie Favaza, who covered the Maine Mariners. Tommy Chard, who's one of the best amateur golfers in Maine history, who's very well known. Mike Lowe just recently retired. He covered a lot of UMaine sports. He's been with us. And a couple of editors, Mike Spaff, John Ewing, very well known award-winning photographer. And we all worked together. We're being a little bravado, but we felt that that era in the 1980s was the golden era for the Portland Press Herald because they had a much bigger staff and a much bigger budget, and they were able to do a lot of stuff, as witnessed by the fact that I was flitting about with the UMaine baseball team for a couple of years, and we always covered them home and away out in Omaha and in the different regionals, and then I covered the Maine guides. We traveled with them. We traveled with the Maine Mariners, and it was so much fun, as evidenced by the fact that once or twice a year we all meet either in Portland or Saco or Old Orchard Beach, anywhere from 6 to 12 people, just talking about those great old days.
Well, yeah, I think about those days and the tremendous staff that the Press Herald had, the Bangor Daily News, some of the guys that were on that staff back in the day, covering such an exciting time in the history of University of Maine sports, and it's a different landscape today, to be sure. You know that well. What's the future of sports journalism from your perspective?
Well, I mean, it's. I don't want to be the get-off-my-lawn guy who constantly says, back in my day, things were better. I don't know if things were better. Things were certainly different. It's the print edition isn't what it used to be, but there's a lot of online outlets where people can work. I happen to be very lucky that I work for The Athletic, and we have over 400 full-time writers alone. We're owned by the New York Times, and we're able to invest all kinds of capital, both in terms of money and in terms of manpower, to cover all the big events across the world. And so there may not be as many jobs down the road, but I think that I still say I maintain that the people who really, really, really want to be in this business will be in this business, and that there will be jobs for them. I will also say that I think right now the writing is as good as it's ever been in the history of sports journalism. The way the writers can there's two ways to do it. You can storytell, which has always been my stock and trade, and the people who are able to do very elaborate statistical breakdowns and so forth, which has not been my stock and trade. But we have really good people doing both, and I'm proud to work with these younger people.
Has it been a good thing, Buck, that the audience is more involved now actively because of things like comment sections? And we know a lot of that can be just an awful place for people to be. But by and large, do you think it has contributed to journalism at all to have the readers, the viewers, the listeners play a more active role in things?
I don't know that it's contributed to it. It's allowed me to, on a different level, to communicate with the people that read my stuff. I have a certain unwritten policy that if someone leaves a comment, your column stinks and you're lousy, and I just ignore it. I'm not going to play this and that with a person who feels that way. If someone has a legitimate complaint, gripe, disagreement, or to point out a factual mistake, hey, I agree with your column, but you said this, and I don't think that's accurate. I'm more than happy to have that dialogue. And I also know that you aren't going to please everybody. I wrote a column on Bill Belichick, why it became such a big deal. And I highlighted 6 or 7 different points. Like, why did this become such a huge, riveting story that everybody in the country talked about? And I touched on 6 or 7 points. And there were comments there, why do you hate Belichick? You've always hated him, and this is your chance. And in that very same comment thread, in the very same one, there were comments like, why are you such a Bill Belichick toady? So you go find the piece. I invite your listeners to go find it. And I am either somebody who despises Bill Belichick, or I am a Bill Belichick toady. So I suppose I'm doing something right if you got people, you know, swinging from one side of the barnyard to the next, as it were. So I find that fascinating. And that is fairly common, by the way.
We're talking with Steve Buckley here on Downtown. Speaking of recent pieces, a terrific piece on Michael Vick becoming the college football coach at Norfolk State. And you wrote about why that's a good thing because of what it will properly focus attention on.
I like to think that what Michael Vick did, and I'm not a big fancier of canceling and you can never work again and so forth. If you are able to work and you are legally out there in the marketplace, you have a right to work. And the teams and the schools and the programs have a right to hire people. I have no complaint with that. I happen to think a small price to pay for Michael Vick, because I think some of the things that happened with those dogs was heinous, and he has certainly paid a very steep price for that, both in terms of his freedom and money. And I think that if his presence in the marketplace every once in a while, as happened here, gives us a chance to revisit that and call attention to the peril of dog abuse and animal abuse, then that's a small price for him to pay. As I stated quite succinctly in that column, which also ran in the Times, I'm a dog lover, and I feel, in fact, my nephew and niece are visiting right now from Philly, and they have their 2 dogs here to go along with my 3, so it's quite a busy house right now. And I've just always been an animal lover, and I think to torture and harm animals is just about the lowest you can go, and he paid a steep price for that.
Well, it's a wonderful piece. Check it out at The Athletic if you haven't read it already. All right, I don't want to put you in a spot here, but I'm going to anyway. Your years covering University of Maine sports, do you have, and I won't ask you to pick one, let's say maybe a couple of favorite UMaine athletes that you reported on through the years?
Well, obviously Billy Swift, because he was a great pitcher, and he was also a star left fielder, and he was one of the best hitters on the team. I always like telling the story about that game in Providence that went like 17, 18 innings.
Oh, yes.
And Larry Mahoney from the Bangor News covered it, and the BDN, and I covered it for the Press Herald. A very, very young Jackie McMullen covered it for the Boston Globe. And at about 5 or 6 in the morning, we went directly from McCoy Stadium in Providence to the Howard Johnson's Hotel and had breakfast and then went to bed. And at some point in that game, they had Brad Colton in left and Tommy Vanettestein, who was, I think, from Bangor,
yes,
or right outside of Bangor. He was in right field, and they're playing Providence, and they have like a runner on second and one out, and a lefty batter comes up, and John Winken, this is a true story, he comes out and he moves Brad Colton over to right because he had a stronger throwing arm, and he moved Tommy Vanettestein to left, and the batter dutifully hit a single to right field. Brad Colton comes in, scoops up the ball, throws the runner out at the plate, and then Winken comes out and switches Brad back to left field and Tommy back to right field.
Wow.
And people say Wink was a genius. I mean, that's one example. I mean, he really nailed it that night. So that's a famous story. But also, like, Stu Lacognotta, a big, tall righty from Portland High, and obviously the late, great Freddie Staples, who was on the bench for 4 years, and then in 83, going into Omaha, or going into the Northeast Regional, they needed a shortstop, and he went in and played some great baseball. They played Navy, and there was a kid named Andy Lofersky from Navy, who made three phenomenal catches in that game in a losing cause to Maine. A few years back in The Athletic, I mentioned that in a column I'd written, and lo and behold, someone brought it to Andy Lofersky's attention, and he sent me a very nice email. We corresponded for a bit. He went on to become a commercial pilot, as did Stu Lacognotta,
right,
at the University,
right,
of Maine, and he became a commercial pilot. But the fact that that was 42 years ago and I can still recall it would indicate that I did indeed have some tremendous good times covering those teams.
And weren't you up here the game that Billy Reynolds hit four home runs?
I was and I wasn't. I was covering, I think that was 84, 85. I was not covering the team anymore, but I came up with a game and I was in the stands. It was a day game, very, very sunny game, and I was in the stands. I forget who I was with, but that was Billy Reynolds, right?
Yes, yep.
Yeah, and I ran into him outside Fenway Park about 2 or 3 years ago. He was at Fenway with his son, and he saw me, and he came up. I remember what he said. He said, "Steve, I don't know if you remember me, but my name is Billy Reynolds, not that Billy Reynolds." Meaning not the Bill Reynolds who was the sports columnist for the Providence Journal.
Right.
Very well known. And I put my hand up. I said, no. I remember Bill Reynolds very well. I covered your games. And he got hit in the face once with a pitch, and he wore like a unique batting helmet with like a sort of a crossbar that came across his left cheek. And I mentioned that to him. And we had a nice chat. And I remember telling him, I really laid it on because he was with his little son. And I said, "Bill, you're one of the best players I ever covered." And I went on and on. And he played a few years of minor league baseball. He was a good ball player.
Well, Buck, it is always great to talk with you. We appreciate your contributions to the show through all the years and coming on with us today. And hope you'll do it again in whatever format we're in going forward into the new year.
You have my number, and I would look forward to it, and I'd be on it. Like I said, I've had so much fun. I'm sure you saw Pete Abes from the Globe had a nice little note about you in Sunday's paper.
I did. That was very kind.
And I echo those sentiments.
Well, thanks, Steve. We appreciate it. As always, Happy New Year to you, and we'll talk to you in the coming weeks.
Take care.
Thanks, Steve. Steve Buckley of The Athletic with us here on Downtown. We've